You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Man, we're dipping back into that 80s time box here with missing persons. I have a great missing persons story, but I'm definitely not going to tell that tonight because we got more important things to do. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 on the air tonight, and very much grateful for everybody listening in, trying to sort through some great interviews here tonight. We're going to start it off with our first one here from the Houston Dynamo. He's the assistant coach of the team, but he has had a resume that's pretty remarkable, both from the playing and coaching standpoint. He has been an assistant to Tab Ramos at the under-20 level, been an assistant for Iran's national team that qualified for the World Cup. Also has been an under-18 national team coach, but long, extensive playing career, both in the indoor and outdoor game. He's Omid Namazi, and he joins us now. Omid, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me, Glenn. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you and have admired your work from here and afar. So I guess the first thing I do want to ask you, though, before we talk shop here, is how are you and your family doing during this quarantine period?
Everyone's doing well. I have my two boys that are with my ex in New Jersey, and I'm here with my wife, residing here in Houston. We are doing okay. You know, it's hard times to just stay in, but we're taking all the precautions and making sure that, you know, first and foremost, we're safe. We're keeping everybody else safe, and at the same time, really anxious to get back to work and get back to the grind.
Yeah, Omid Namazi joining us here. He's the assistant coach for the Houston Dynamo and Tab Ramos. You know, I've asked this question to some of the players that have come on, Christian Ramirez, and what are you learning when you're at home in this quarantine period? Because I know I'm learning things, and I know I also don't want to waste this period because it's just what we're dealt. But what are you learning at home during this period? It could be anything.
Well, and one of the interesting things that's happened over the course of this period is that we have held a lot of different calls with the players. You know, everybody's doing the Zoom thing, and we have a different platform, but very similar to Zoom. And we get together with the players three or four times a week, and throughout these calls, with some of the exercises that we have done over video, one of the things that's really been very interesting is getting to know players on a personal level, which sometimes you get to know them, especially when you're working with a club and, you know, you're day in and day out at work and getting to know the players better. But I was working mostly with the national teams for the last, I would say, 10 years. So that personal connection is not always there. You know, with national teams, you get players coming in and they leave right after camp, and you don't get to spend much time with them. And the little time that you have with them, you have to hurry up and get them organized and get them ready for a game. So here and throughout this period, working with the players on video conferencing, we've gotten to know them on a personal level, knowing their life stories, how they've been brought up, you know, whether it's, you know, being brought up in Argentina or Honduras or you know, Slovenia. We've gotten to know a lot about the players on that level, and, you know, some of the more personal things that usually you don't get to know about the players. So it's been really interesting to listen to everybody's story. And we actually did the same thing for our staff. So the staff got together on a call, and we each spend about 7 or 8 minutes talking about our life story, how we got here from the beginning, where we were born, maybe a different country, and then how we got here to Houston. So it's been quite a learning experience here.
Omid Namazi joining us here, Houston Dynamo assistant. Well, speaking of growing up in another country, tell me what it was like from 6 to 18 in Iran from a footballing perspective, and what do you remember, and maybe some of your influences?
Yeah, very interesting. So, as you said, I was born here in the States, but then when I was 6, we, as a family, we moved back to Iran, and I pretty much from the time we landed in Iran, I had an uncle who was a pretty good player and played at a decent level at the club level in Iran. And I sort of, you know, he became my idol, sort of the guy who I followed his footsteps and followed him around wherever there was a game, there was a practice session, whether we were playing on the streets, 3v3, which is very common in Iran. Not so much anymore, but back in those days, you see kids playing on the streets at this 3-on-3 game with plastic balls all over the country and all over the city of Tehran, which I grew up in. And that's sort of how I grew up with the game and played a lot of pickup games until I was 12, 13 years old. And then it became more where I had to make a choice whether I wanted to continue in the game or sort of be left behind. So at that point, I had such a passion for the game that I joined a club, and it became much more structured. Now I was part of a professional club in their youth system, youth ranks. Facilities weren't that great, but, you know, we did with what we had, and I grew up in that environment. It was a tough environment. You had to fight your way every day and try to prove yourself in every training session. So I think in that regard, it helped me become the player that I was, and then later on, it also helped me with my coaching.
Talking to Omid Namazi of the Houston Dynamo, the assistant coach, and great background in the game, both as a player and as a coach. All right, so that's an interesting thing you just said, because as you know, Tab was on the show last week, and we were talking about Soccer Town USA and the ethnic groups around the city in New York and the Gunnell Oval and Dirt Fields. My youth coach came from Kearney, so I got pulled into that environment from the suburbs and played a lot of games over there. You're talking about Dirt Fields. Do you ever get concerned that it's gotten a little, I don't know what the right word is, maybe homogenized, maybe a little bit cushy at times? Because, you know, you're from that age group that, you know, you just love the game beyond belief. You want to stay in it any way you possibly can, as long as you can. Does that concern you with all your youth background and player development?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the last 10 years in soccer or youth soccer in the U.S. and the development of players, I think we have a larger base of players. There's much more or many more players participating and playing the game. Therefore, you have a base of players that's probably much better than the players of my era. But I just think that, and this is true about the Development Academy that just went under. I thought the Development Academy served a purpose. I thought it was good. It created this environment for all the players to be able to grow and to become better players. But at times we felt, you know, as national team coaches scouting those games and trying to pick players for the national teams, we felt that at times it was, I would call it too vanilla or too pretty. It could have been, you know, if it was a more competitive environment or more competitive games, I would feel, or I think that that would have helped us on a much better level. But I still think it served a purpose. Now MLS talking about doing their own league and keeping it sort of within the MLS teams and making it more competitive for the players and for the teams. I think that's gonna put us at a different level. So I do agree that it became a little cushy, it became a little vanilla, but at the same time, I think it served a purpose where we were lacking in that department in player development.
If MLS breaks out on its own, Omid, how do they make it more competitive? In other words, is that simply because they're going to be playing amongst each other, not with outside DA teams, or is it more international competition? What would it be?
Both. I think you'll see MLS sort of branch out and bring in or get out and play more international games, sort of what they do with the GA Cup. So expand on the GA Cup, but also think, you know, keeping it to MLS teams or some of the top tier non-MLS clubs. I think the games become more competitive. I mean, I remember sitting there watching, a club from North Carolina that you never heard of playing against the Seattle Sounders Academy, and the game was 8-0. And, you know, it was not very competitive. The players that played in that game on either side, they didn't gain anything from that game, whether you were winning 8-0 or whether you were losing 8-0. There's nothing to gain in those games. I mean, I always believe the games that the players really develop in, or the environment the players develop in, are games or environments where they're challenged. They struggle to be successful. That struggle is going to make the players become, you know, the next level or become international players. Without that, it's really not serving a purpose. So I feel, yes, with MLS trying to go overseas and playing more international competition, but also keeping everything amongst themselves within the MLS, I think it's going to create a more competitive environment altogether.
I'm looking at your resume, playing career. I think I may have played against you when you were on the Washington Diplomats. That would have been like your first year. But then you go in the indoor game as well. And, man, you were a very good indoor player. I remembered you from playing the indoor game, Philadelphia Kicks. And so it's been an amazing career for you because you've bounced back and forth between the indoor and the outdoor game. Now you're focused on the outdoor game.
Yeah.
Why do you and Tab click so well? Because he called you his right-hand man. You guys click really well. And I'm sure you're going to say, well, it's because we look at the game the same. But what else is it? What's the chemistry? Because there's great partnerships in coaching.
Yeah, I think personalities, I think background and how we grew up with the game of soccer, a lot of similar aspects. And besides looking at the game the same way, I think our personalities mesh. You know, he's been a winner all his life, and he's always pushing to make everything better around the team. And I sort of look at everything the same way, whether it's training sessions or games or players, and what kind of players do we need to be successful. So we're on the same page a lot. I mean, there are times where we disagree on things, but, you know, we talk about it and we have some hard conversations. I remember we were sitting in England and we were talking about pressing, and we had just finished playing a Dutch team that took us apart. I mean, they just picked us apart all game long. We could have won the game. It ended up being, I think, a 3-2 game that we lost. But we talked about how we were pressing in that game and how we should have been pressing. I remember it was a heated conversation. It was a long conversation between him and I, and Brian Bliss was the other leg of the conversation. And we went at it. But at the end of the day, we came to a conclusion, this is how we're going to do it. And everybody was in agreement of that way of playing or pressing or whatever the case may be. But I think, since day one, we've had a good understanding of each other. He's been very good to me, very loyal, and I think I've responded with the same type of loyalty and really wanting the best for him, whether I've been with him or not. You know, there was a time here in the last few months before we got to Houston that I wasn't working with him, but I always, you know, followed the games. The U-20 went to the World Cup, and I was like glued to the TV, wanting Tab to do well. So, I think it goes both ways.
Tab Ramos, Omid Namazi, and then the third member of the coaching staff, Pablo Mastroianni, and the staff goes further and further, even more so. Where is that line of demarcation sometimes? Because look, I've always looked at coaches, and I say, well, maybe that's a hire because that's a hire that is not a threat to a head coach. And let's face it, these things happen in the world of professional sports. And then there's coaches that are going, you know what, I'm finding the best guy that knows something about the game or an element of the game or an area of the game that's better than me. You know, and that to me is confidence. I mean, Tab is not a guy that obviously wants a yes man. He wants real contribution. So where is that line of demarcation? Yeah. Because you just really kind of took us into something really interesting there.
Yeah, I think, you know, with coaching, and I've been a head coach before, I think one of the first things you look for in an assistant is there's got to be a trust factor. I'm not talking about someone who's just going to come sit there and give you the yes, but someone who you can trust with everything. Someone who you can go in a room and like I just talked about, you know, hash it out, whatever, the disagreements, and you come out of a room united and think in the same way. You know, I definitely, if you asked that, he would tell you, I'm definitely not a yes man. I will speak my mind, and if it's completely against what, you know, the general sense is in the room is, that's fine. I will still say it. And then, you know, if I'm convinced otherwise, I will go with that, or, you know, maybe I can convince the rest of the people in that room, then that's it. But, I just think trust and loyalty are the biggest things for two people working together. For a head coach, it's very important to know there's a guy that's going to support him through thick and thin, and he's going to battle it out, and there's never going to be that sort of thing where, okay, I'm looking for my best interest. It's the best interest of us as a group, as a team, but also I'm completely loyal and so single-minded about wanting Tab to do well, because if he does well, I'll do well. Yeah. That's the way I look at it. And through this working together, we can, again, disagree, but at the same time, we're always pushing forward with the same goal in mind.
It's always exciting to see great staffs that work together, and then it all comes to fruition with the team on the field. And, you know, I look closely at that stuff because I think it's incredibly interesting with the dynamic. And, by the way, I do need to mention that Omid has been a head coach a number of times for a number of games with a number of different clubs. So I just wanted to get that out there. All right, so now when you're considering all these different things that can happen here with the coronavirus and the league starting and when and preseason, and because you're going to have to do, maybe another 3 weeks, does the roster look different if the season might be shortened? In other words, do you have to begin to look at the roster maybe a little differently as to who can do what over a shortened season? I mean, take us into some of those things now.
Yeah, I think it's very tough to think about the roster in a different way. The roster is what it is right now, and for the length of this season, whatever the length may be, whether it's 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, whatever that, the roster is in place. We have to work with this roster, and the thing that's going to be challenging is the games are going to be condensed. You know, we're going to have to play probably, I'm not sure, but I would assume we'd have to play every 3 or 4 days to make sure that we get a season in, if that's what the MLS wants to do. So now all of a sudden, a roster that usually use about 16 to 17 players on a regular basis, now all of a sudden you got to look beyond those numbers and think about your whole roster, because games are going to come in a hurry, and you're going to be able to replace players and get them in the games, and they got to get out there and compete and perform. So now your attention span's got to get even bigger. And, you know, you can't just concentrate on those first 16 and 17. You got to think about a whole roster, which is the case usually in Europe, and teams that are involved in Champions League. That's how they look at things. They look at a big roster of players, and everybody's involved. Everybody's contributing at some point in the season. And that's going to happen for us, too.
Omid Namazi joining us here, Houston Dynamo assistant. Omid, thank you so much for coming on tonight. This was great. I would like to invite you back again. This is great soccer talk, and I know my listeners are getting a lot out of this. So thank you very much for that, and thank you for your time tonight.
Anytime, Glenn.
Yeah, you're the best.
To be here.
Thank you, Omid. We appreciate it very much.
Right.
By the way, Omid played at WVU, too, where our good friend and my good friend, Oliver Luck, was quarterback in college and also went back to be the athletic director. So great stuff there from Omid Namazi, We appreciate him coming on tonight. All right, stay with us. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, brought to you by John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. A huge happy birthday to Tom Clare, the legendary author from Manchester, England, the huge Manchester United, I call him a gatekeeper, historian. Big birthday today for Tom Clare. We appreciate Tom so much. What a man. Taking a break. We're coming back. Edson Buttle is up next. Columbus Crew LA Galaxy, one of only 11 players in MLS history to score 100-plus goals.
ESPN 97.5.